Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lady Justice is a true crime podcast. Therefore, deals with incidents of violence, disturbing imagery, and explicit content. Listener discretion is advised. The Lady Justice podcast wishes to offer their deepest condolences to the victims' families and gives thanks to those who work in emergency services. Hello, my lovelies, and welcome to the monthly bite-sized bonus episode of Lady Justice. Bite-sized bonus episodes are released on the last day of the month, which cover cases where there's not so much information out there, but really do need to be recognised. There's not much talking beforehand this time, but please remember to share this podcast with your friends, subscribe, rate, and leave a review. As always, all my sources are linked in the show notes. Our case this week takes place in 1970 in the county of Norfolk. She'll always be the girl that didn't come home last night to me, the 18-year-old who was full of life and looking forward to a bright future. That is how Molly Long would remember her daughter, Susan. And unfortunately, both of Susan's parents would pass away without ever knowing what exactly happened to their only child on the late night of March 10th, 1970. In fact, 51 years on, the murderer of Susan has yet to be caught. Susan was a pretty, dark-haired 18-year-old. She lived a quiet life with her parents, Derek, a joiner, and Molly, a canteen worker, at Sir William's Lane in the village of Aylsham, Norfolk. She was employed as an insurance clerk at Norwich Union, 12 miles from her home, and would travel via the number 10 bus on a season ticket. In the 4 months before her death, she'd started to make major changes to her life. She'd met 19-year-old apprentice gas fitter, David Tungate. It was the first steady relationship each of them had, and they were planning on getting engaged. He lived at Estelle Road, in the city of Norwich, and the couple had a routine that every Tuesday, after finishing work, Susan would go to his home for tea before they would go dancing, usually at the Gala Ballroom on St. Stephen's Road. After a night of dancing, she would get the last bus home, arriving at the marketplace of the village and walking the short route home that would only take her 7 minutes. Things were changing, as I said. The young woman had been saving for a car, with her purchasing one just before March 10th. Yet decided to use the bus season ticket she'd already bought that expired that night. She'd not renewed it. The Wednesday morning, she'd planned to drive to work for the first time. March 10th was nothing really special in the eyes of all that knew Susan. Her parents said goodbye to her when she left for work, knowing she would be home around 11:30 p.m. as she kept a regular routine and was a responsible woman. She never accepted lifts from anyone, and she was conscious of her safety. This was something that had a significance, as not even a year beforehand, the disappearance of 14-year-old April Fab had happened just 7 miles from her home. That evening, she enjoyed her night at the gala. She was in good spirits, and her boyfriend walked her to the bus station to catch her bus, giving her a kiss before she boarded, and stayed to wave her off as the bus departed with a fellow 16 passengers on board. The bus arrived without a hitch, and although the driver could not be sure, he believed that Susan left the bus at her usual stop near the market. Yet her parents, still awake and waiting to hear the key turn in the lock from downstairs, didn't hear such. They began to worry, with Derek getting dressed and taking his bicycle out along the route she would walk home. He arrived home and gave the news that he'd found nothing to his wife, and come 1 a.m, they called the police to notify that she had gone missing. The dark night meant that no search was to be completed by the police. At 5:15 a.m. on the 11th, milkman James Bacon was making his morning rounds in his float. As he turned just after the railway bridge on the dirt track on Berg Road, he took a sudden stop. Not stepping out of the vehicle, he could see a woman laid out in a large puddle of water, clearly dead. He reversed and made his way to the Stapleford farm and called the police. When they arrived, they noticed a struggle and cordoned off the crime scene. The woman was removed and taken to St. Michael's Hospital in Aylsham, whilst officers scoured the surrounding areas for clues to how she'd come to her death. Police had an idea who the woman was, as her parents had already notified them, yet they went to the home of the Long family. When they arrived, they found that Derek and his brother-in-law Thomas had already set out in search of the missing woman, and they were called back to the devastating news that a body had been found. Derek was accompanied to the mortuary, in which he confirmed the woman found was that, of course, of Susan. Her body showed that she had been sexually assaulted, and then had been strangled. It was discovered that she was not only missing a blue sling-backed heeled shoe, but a blue, white and gold bracelet. The post-mortem was to identify that during the fight for her life, she had made the attacker bleed, with skin, likely coming from the face, located under her fingernails. That skin was enough for the police to get a full DNA profile of her likely killer, but there's more on that later. The lonely country lane was searched, yet presented no further clues, and the investigation began with Detective Chief Inspector Reginald Taylor of Norfolk CID and Detective Chief Superintendent John Cass of Scotland Yard leading a joint inquiry. The fellow passengers from the bus journey were traced and spoken to, yet provided no further information. An appeal was made for anyone in the vicinity of the area between the hours of 11 p.m. and 5:15 a.m. to come forward. This led the investigators to discover that at 12:30 a.m. that evening, the headlights of a vehicle were seen near the Muckland sewage works, just yards from the end of Berg Road. However, the owner was never to be traced. The officers also looked into tracing a 1959 to 1961 Ford car that had possibly been resprayed to a metallic maroon colour, which was seen, yet nothing was to come from this either. As police spoke to the residents of the village, someone said they saw a woman they believed to be Susan, speaking to two men who were inside a green Ford Anglia car a week before the murder. The men and car were never traced. The news of Susan's death made national news, with a photo of the young woman who had once served as a Sunday school teacher appearing on the front page of the Daily Mirror in the days after her death. Even though all 2,635 residents of the village had been spoken to, every adult and almost all of the children, no further clues to who killed Susan would come. In May of 1970, under the supervision of Norwich police surgeon Dr. John Hilton, a team of doctors were to spend a week in Aylsham, taking blood samples of the 1,000 men living there in hopes of identifying the murderer. It was the first time such had been undertaken in a British murder investigation. Despite this, no link to the killer came to light. During the August, at the Village Agricultural Show, the police set up a special booth that they hoped would gain fresh attention and information. It exhibited photos of Susan, her missing left shoe, and the bracelet that was lost. Come 1971, nothing much more was known. Detective Chief Inspector Taylor stated the obvious motive was sex. The police believed that the killer was likely a local, As the country lane in which the discovery of Susan's body was made was an isolated spot, known by those who were familiar with the area as Spratt's Green, and wouldn't have been in a stranger's knowledge. The People on Sunday newspaper were to offer £50,000 in hopes of bringing fresh leads to the investigation, with an article outlining the basics of the case. Inside, there was also a statement from Molly, who talked about the effect of her daughter's death a year on, saying, "Susan was an only child, an only grandchild, so you can imagine how we feel. Now she is gone, this is an empty house. It's not a home anymore. Our lives revolved around Susan. We only live for one thing, for the murderer to be caught. The terrible thing is that we suspect everybody. If someone in the street turns away, perhaps to save us embarrassment, we wonder if they're hiding something. It's not fair on the local people. It's not fair on us. The murderer must be caught." Susan's father, Derek, said, "Susan's death is all I think about day and night. She was so regular catching the last bus on Tuesday night. Too regular. It seemed too much of a coincidence that the murder happened on the very last night she caught the bus. It was the last chance that the murderer had to get her on her own as she walked home in the dark. And he took it." With the investigation now a year old, it was revealed that the police had interviewed over 20,000 people in regards to Susan's death, with the investigation reaching the Gulf of Arabia and Singapore. All the local men were questioned, including those that worked with her at Norwich Union and at the local RAF base. Every avenue was explored. On Thursday, January 21st, 1971, Scotland Yard announced they were looking into a vital link that could have placed Susan's murderer at a further three killings. They appealed for a two-year-old family car that may have been connected to the murder of Rita Sawyer, 18 years old, who was strangled near Harbury in Warwickshire, Barbara Mayo, 24, who was found strangled in Derbyshire, and 18-year-old Jacqueline Anseline Lamb, who was found strangled in Cheshire. The police dismissed that Susan's case was linked to the disappearance of April Fab. Eventually, the links between the four murders were dismissed. Rita Sawyer's killer was later identified via DNA. However, her murderer had passed. Both Jacqueline and Barbara's murder have since been linked to serial killer Peter Sutcliffe, yet never convicted. In January of 1977, the murder of 14-year-old Heidi Redden in Downham Market, 51 miles away from Elsham, made investigators reopen Susan's case. Yet, again, this was dismissed after Peter Hunter was identified as Heidi's killer. Since then, police have investigated the case numerous times and appeal for information on the anniversary every year. Now, you may be asking, if the police have a full DNA profile of the killer, why has no one ever been identified, despite the advances over the years? Well, in short, it's likely because her killer has never been in the UK's national DNA database. Familial DNA is an amazing technique that could help and has been looked at by the Norfolk and Suffolk Major Investigations team. Yet since the government closed the only company to provide such testing in the UK back on March 31st, 2012, this will likely not happen for such time. The Forensic Science Service, which was funded by the government, had previously secured convictions based on the technique they created for familial DNA matching, such as Craig Harmon in 2004, and they also helped to bring Ronald Castry to justice for the murder of Leslie Morseed in 1975. Yet, you know, cost-cutting. Derek Long passed away from cancer in 1981. Molly was to die on the 8th of March 2014. Both never knew who took their daughter from them. Susan has no living relatives. Andy Guy, the unsolved case manager in charge of the case now, said, "Susan Long is one of the very defining homicides in Norfolk. It terrified the community, but it would be so nice over 50 years later to draw a line under it and know those responsible for her murder." So that's the end of this episode. If you have any information, no matter how small, you can contact Crime Stoppers anonymously at 0800 555 111. or contact the Norfolk and Suffolk Major Investigations team via their contact information, which you can find in the show notes. With that, go be good people, go be kind, go be safe, and most importantly, go be happy.